Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer. So let's bring her out. The star attraction. The one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. JUDYGOLD.
You were ordained as a priest in 1999.
Right, but between those two...
Between 88 and 99, what were you doing?
So 88, I'm a novice, and I'm working in with the poor. I was in Jamaica.
With Mother Teresa.
His sisters. They were amazing.
Okay. You met Mother Teresa?
No. This was in Jamaica. This was her sisters, the Missionaries of Charity. That's right.
So annoying.
What a jip.
I know.
So, you do a lot of work with the poor, you do a lot of prayer, and then you take your vows in 1990 in Boston, and then philosophy in Chicago. When I was doing philosophy, I worked with street gang members, believe it or not.
No.
I know, it was crazy.
Wow.
It was really crazy. And worked with homeless people. And then for 2 years, we have a period called Regency, where you reign, where you work full-time in a Jesuit ministry. And my ministry was I worked for 2 years in Kenya with refugees in Nairobi, which was great.
Now, you lived there for 2 years?
Yeah.
Where'd you live?
In Nairobi. In
a tent? Or
No. Nairobi's a big town, so yeah. I lived in the Jesuit community. But we worked in a slum, and I worked with – this was really interesting. I worked with refugees who had come from all over East Africa who settled in Nairobi with a group called the Jesuit Refugee Service. And you'll love this. I helped them start small businesses.
That's perfect!
It was. And you know what? You know what they say? God writes straight with crooked lines. And so all these things that I thought I'd never use, I helped women start sewing cooperatives.
Amazing.
It was great. And I'm really proud of that. We had bakeries. We had carpentry shops. And then we started a shop, which is still running, called the Mikono Center, which is after the Swahili word for hands, which marketed their handicrafts. Isn't that cool?
That's amazing.
It was. It was great.
I
love that job.
You said that was your first – those 2 years were like the happiest of your life.
They were. I really – I mean, I you know, it was fun and creative and funny. Right. You know, the refugees were often lighthearted and very hopeful. And that's why I'm a big advocate for refugees and migrants now, because I see what they're like and what they have to go through.
Yeah, so are the powers that be in our country.
I know. Thank
they're
God.
Great. Yeah, they're so God. Good.
So that was 2 years. And then I came back, worked for a year at America Magazine. Then I went to theology in Boston, where I went to the Seder.
Yes.
Learned all about the Old Testament. And then I was ordained in 1999. And all my friends came, which is great. All my Jewish friends.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. Now, you say that you gave up everything. You gave your parents $30,000. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You just got rid of everything. Yeah. And it was the most freeing.
Oh, totally.
Like, when I was reading that, I thought, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm burdened by my things.
You don't need all your stuff. That's like George Carlin's thing about stuff.
Right.
All that. Yeah, it was very freeing. You take a vow of poverty and you rely completely on the community. So I don't really own. I mean,
You have a TV.
I have a TV in my room, but I can't go out and buy a TV without. I mean, I would have to ask permission and ask for money from my community.
Do you have a good TV?
It's all right.
How big?
it's like that big.
No, not a good TV.
No. But see, now that's what
you can come over and watch TV at my place.
See, now that's the vow of poverty. I could not go to my spear and say, I need a much bigger TV.
Right.
If it's broken, you know, they'll replace it.
Like, what if you wanted to buy like noise canceling headphones?
You would say to the superior, well, so you're given like a little stipend, a personalia, they call it. It's Latin for just like the personal stipend. And, you know, if it's within what your stipend is, you can buy it. But, and, you know, you might say, I travel a lot and so I need
a car.
You say, like, okay. No, you can
never get a car.
No. I mean, I live in a community. It's like a commune, basically.
Okay.
And there's a house car. So you sign it out, that kind of
stuff. Wow.
Yeah. But no, like that's the kind of stuff like I can never rent a car. Well, I don't know what I want a car or a house or anything like that. And all my royalties go to the Jesuits.
Right.
So everything. So that's a couple of $1 million go to the Jesuits.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But it's very free. It is truly freeing. Because I don't have to worry about it.
And you don't need a will.
No. And, they provide for me, too. That's the other thing.
Right.
So I'm
But you also love what you do. It's like.
Poverty is the least difficult vow.
What's the most difficult
vow? Chastity.
I bet.
I mean, you know.
Like, do priests talk about that?
Oh, all the time.
Really?
Yeah. Well, of course. It's like, I mean, it's like married couples talk about, you know, their sex lives with one another, but. Yeah,
but you know, some of them do it on the side.
Some of the priests?
Yeah.
Not the ones I know. I mean, I read about them and I know that there's problems and stuff, but it's like married couples. Yes. Are there some that aren't keeping their vows? But.
Yeah.
Yes. But, you know, as a rule, no. And like, you know, none of my friends are. So, no, we take it pretty seriously. So we talk.
Don't you whine? Do you whine and complain? Like,
sometimes. Yeah, sometimes it's like you're lonely.
I know. Don't you want to just lay in bed with someone naked?
Yes. But, you know, I've chosen not to. There's other ways of loving people.
Right.
It's just a different way of. It's not saying it's better or worse.
Right.
You know, sex is bad. It's a different way of loving people. It's loving them, you know, like friends. And, and truly, there are a lot of, I don't want to say compensations because that sounds terrible. You know, you do have more time for friends. You just do. Because I don't have a partner or a wife or whatever. So that makes it easier. But it is difficult. The joke is, you know, in the Jesuits, like, oh, he's leaving because he couldn't live the vows.
Right.
It's like, oh, which one? I mean, like, you know, it's chastity. But poverty is very freeing. That I find very freeing. The only time I think it's difficult for me is I was talking to a friend of mine, like, I have never flown business class.
Oh,
so you kind of can't, like, you know, I mean, I just can't ask for
like,
that.
Like, what if you're you're like Rob Schlackman, you're 6'7", and you're a priest, and you have to get on a plane coach.
Now, if you're a Jesuit, I mean, you know, you kind of suck it up, basically. And part of it is identifying with the poor and trying to live.
I can't identify with the poor.
Not
on the plane. I have a fake knee. I can't. I'm done. I'm done identifying with the poor.
Do you have a comfort animal, though?
No.
I saw someone with.
They're cracking down on that, by the way.
Yeah. I always wondered. This is like totally off topic.
Right.
What happens if you have an allergy? And you're sitting next to someone with a comfort allergy. Like,
it's ridiculous.
Who wins?
Right.
No, I saw someone with a duck the other day.
No way.
Mm-hmm.
A duck?
Yeah, on a plane.
You're lying.
No, I'm not.
Like a duck with feet, with yellow feet and the beak.
Like
and
a duck. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or at least I saw them. I saw the person with a duck waiting in the, what do you call it?
Was like the duck in a cage?
No, the duck was like loose. Walk.
No way.
The person was like cuddling the duck. And then I saw an article about someone with a duck, coincidentally, just the other day in the Times. Yeah.
I don't even know what to say.
No, I know.
But did the duck have a leash?
No, it was like, he was like holding it.
Okay. I'm sorry, that's
mental. Well,
the other
thing is, you know, I flew to the Holy Land, ding, and across the aisle was a woman with a big dog. And I thought, well, no, fortunately the dog was fine.
Right.
But I thought, what if I was allergic?
I know. I just got on a plane.
On this 11-hour flight.
Yeah. I had gone on a plane. It was a small plane to Cape Cod, to Provincetown. I have a place there because it's in the rule book. And so this woman, older woman, brings her older dog on the – like the dog can't even walk up the stairs and shoves him. And I'm like, the poor dog.
I know.
Just like drive.
I know.
What is the Pope like?
Well, we talk every day. And he's really been bugging me with a lot of his texts.
No.
I met him once and I shook his hand. I have a lot of friends who are friends of his, but I only met him once and it was very brief.
Like, is there a feeling you get when you're like near the Pope?
I'll tell you a story. This is I've not told you. Yeah, he's a Jesuit like me, which is the first Jesuit Pope, probably the last because he's shaking things up so much. I'll tell you a story. I've never told this before. I was very focused on meeting him for a long time after he was elected in whatever it was, 2013, because, you know, I really wanted to meet him and maybe he'd give me some, I don't know, like advice or something or support. And so I was really focused on meeting him. And when I was over in Rome once, I don't go that often, but I was over in Rome and I asked someone in the Jesuit headquarters, do you think I could meet him? And they said, well, you know, we don't really like to kind of like arrange that kind of stuff, but maybe you can go to his mass. And then after his mass, you can meet him. Now, in my mind, I had all these stories of all my friends who work in Rome, a lot of Jesuit friends who work in Rome. Oh, my gosh, I met him and he said this and we laughed and there's like pictures on Facebook. Uh-huh. And then he told me, oh, my gosh, you're a Jesuit and ha, ha, ha. And oh, and they or he knew me. And so I was getting a little, this is bad, a little too focused, as we say in the Jesuits, too attached to the idea of like, I need to meet the Pope. Okay. Right. So I go over there. They arrange for me to be at one of his masses in the morning, which is pretty small, maybe like 40 or 50 people.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm there and, you know, he's terrific. And he gives this beautiful homily. My Italian's like, okay. But, you know, he's like this, you know, very prayerful guy. And then there's a line to meet him. I've never told this story. So and everyone who goes up to him is like getting the TLC, like, oh, where are you from? And all this and blah, blah, blah. Right. And I prepared this little statement to him, basically saying, I'm a Jesuit from New York. And, you know, this is about 5 years ago. And I just want to thank you for making me want to be a better Jesuit, you know, and you're very, whatever I said to him, you're thank you for being such a good Jesuit, something like that. And it was very short. So I go up to him and I could tell he was tired already. It's
what really, were you at the end of the line?
Very end of the line.
Uh-huh.
So it was early in the morning. He was tired and I could tell you
it's
could just
say, hate Jews.
Well, okay, he was very, you could just tell he was kind of tired. So I go up to him and waiting for my big moment and I shake his hand. He's smiling and nodding. And I say in Spanish, which is my Spanish is not very good. You know, my name is James Martin. I blah, blah, blah. I'm a Jesuit. I work for America Magazine. Thank you for making me want to be a better Jesuit and a good priest and a good this. Oh, gracias. Reza por mí, which means pray for me. And that was it.
That's it?
And so I went away. Here's the point. I went away. And, you know, it was perfectly polite and everything. And I went away and I was sort of like, I've never told this story before, like kind of like, wow, that was kind of like not particularly, you know, overwhelming, you know, mm-hmm. or any, I didn't feel anything inside. I'm going back to the Jesuit community. I'll never forget this. And in the Jesuit community, which is quite big in Rome, there's a huge statue in the garden and it's a statue of Jesus.
Uh-huh.
And it says in Latin, under the statue, I am your salvation. And I realized it's about him. It's about Jesus. It's not about the Pope.
Right.
And I sat down at table. It was breakfast by
Jesus.
That point.
Yeah.
Jesus. And I told this story to some Jesuits that I really respect.
Mm-hmm.
And they said the Pope would agree.
Wow.
And I mean, truly. Like, well, that is the message. And it was a great moment for me to say, It's not about him.
Yeah.
I don't belong to the Society of Pope Francis.
Right.
I belong to the Society of Jesus.
But it seems like all the other ones were like, oh, he's talking to me about me.
Yeah,
you know?
And, right. And so it was really good. It was a good move. And then since then, I've heard from him. I can say that, you know, he supports the work I'm doing, the LGBT work, which is good.
I love that.
Which is more important for me to know right. that he supports that, other than getting like some funny story that I can put on Facebook.
Right, know? Right.
I've never told that story before.
I love that. I got a story that he's never told anyone.
But there's also like there's some hero worship in the church that's bad.
Right.
And like cult of personality. It's right. not about him.
Right.
You know, I didn't join the Jesuits to sort of like be Pope Francis's best friend.
Hey, everyone. Did you know that Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States? And I'm one of them. You're listening to one of them. Fast Growing Trees has everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, house plants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and your space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. Forever. I just want you to know that I just got off a plane and I walked in my apartment. What was the first thing I did? Is I came in and said hi to Avi, my fig tree. I'm telling you, and I have Yael, which is another plant, but Fast Growing Trees has changed my atmosphere here in my apartment. You don't need a lot of space, but they do have, you know, they have stuff for outdoor spaces, but I live in an apartment and I'm telling you, Avi and Yael, yes, they're both Jewish names, Hebrew. The space looks so much better. And I just had a conversation with Avi. Like, I was like, I missed you. I love having living things here. It's very, very, I don't know, it's made this more of a home. It's the best. And Elisa has some too. And she loves them. And she talks to them too. But she got that from me. Anyway, check out Fast Growing Trees. You need to be around plant life. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. You're welcome.
People don't know this. You're a member of the Labyrinth Theater Company.
I'm a proud member.
Yes.
A bad member, though, because I don't go to the meetings. Yeah, I helped out with a play called The Last Days of Judas Iscariot, directed by Phil Hoffman and written by Stephen Adley Gierges, Pulitzer Prize winning, and starring some friends of mine. And that was a lot of fun. And I sort of got involved in that theater, the theater world, and they invited me into their theater company.
Isn't that the greatest?
It was hysterical. They're like,
have you ever acted in anything? Just written.
Except for an unfairly forgotten performance in Bye Bye Birdie in the 1978 Plymouth Whitmore
season. Wow.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
Really?
No,
who'd you play?
I'm teasing. I was Hugo Peabody.
I'm teasing.
I wasn't amazing.
Right.
No, I didn't know anything about
theater.
In fact, at different points, and I wrote a book called Jesuit Off Broadway, and I would say things like, I mean, totally like a complete novice to all this. So when do your practices start? And they're like, yeah, they're called rehearsals.
Rehearsals. I know. Elisa does that to me all the time. She goes, are you going to try out for that part? I go, it's not a tryout. I'm not. It's called an audition. OK, I'm not going on the cheerleading squad.
So, but the great thing was the story, which is a great play, Stephen Gierges, The Last Days of Judas Iscariot. It puts on trial Judas for the the death of Jesus.
Right.
And has all these people that come on, like St. Peter, Mother Teresa, Mary Magdalene, people like that. And I love ringing that bell.
I know. It's the best.
It is the best. And so what I was there for was their theological consultant. And so I worked with Stephen, Phil Hoffman of Happy Memory, Sam Rockwell, who played Judas.
Oh, yeah.
Great Eric Bogosian.
I
think he's Jewish.
I don't think so. I'll look
it up. No, I'm sorry. He's not. He's Orthodox. He's Orthodox. I take that back. He is Orthodox. So anyway, not Orthodox Jewish, Orthodox Christian.
Right.
So the play came out in, I think, 2004, 2006, something like that. And I wrote a book about it. And then they invited me to join the company. So I'm a member of theater.
That is so great.
I am definitely not an actor. I mean, okay. You know what I realize? And you probably know
this. You could be a stand-up, though.
Yeah, you probably know this. What I found from acting in the sort of entertainment world, they are so free.
Right.
And they will just get up and do something.
Right.
And in the Jesuits, it's much more kind of reserved.
Right.
And I found that fascinating. So when we were doing the readings, the table readings, they would get up and just start being that character. And I think I'm a little too self-conscious. They're very unself-conscious, which I liked.
Yeah, you have to get the guard.
And they become friends, and I love them. And it was a fun time.
That's amazing.
It was amazing. And the play was great, and it was really good theology, too. It's great talking to you, by the way.
Oh, I love
you. Such a good conversationalist.
Oh, my God. Oh, Father.
Oh, my God, don't cry.
So you've done some radical sort. You have, like, in the Catholic Church, some opinions and and you're very into the Catholic culture, the culture,
correct,
which is probably why you love writing and love the theater. Mm-hmm. But you've been such an advocate for the LGBTQ or STVWXYZ community, like an unwavering.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable. I mean, especially during this Pride, it's every day is another
tweet
about.
Well, truly, every day. And sometimes I say to myself, "All right, because this is not my life's work," and I say,
right,
"I need to sort of, you know, I need to turn my attention to my book on prayer, which I'm working on." But there's always something, you know, it's like the Godfather that keep pulling me back in. There's always something that's going on that, you know, I feel the responsibility to kind of comment on. And I'll tell you, Judy, this was not something that I planned. You know the story. After the Pulse nightclub massacre in 2016, I was really disappointed. That's a sort of an understatement that the more Catholic bishops weren't, expressing condolence as they do for every other.
Right.
Unfortunately, there's so many mass shooting. And so I did a Facebook video. I was angry, basically, on behalf of them. And that got like 2 million views. And then I was invited to give a talk at New Ways Ministry, which is a group that advocates for and ministers to LGBT Catholics. And I did, and that turned into the book. And the book, Building a Bridge, I say this and people laugh. I say you're going to laugh and they laugh anyway. I didn't think it was going to be a big deal. And so
– oh, my God.
Well, because –
oh, sorry.
It's a pretty – that's all right. It's a pretty – thank God. It's a pretty mild book. I mean, it doesn't challenge any church teaching. It's talking about being respectful, compassionate, and sensitive. And it just blew up. And so I didn't expect it. But, you know, I was talking to a good friend of mine. And have you ever seen the movie Dead Man Walking?
No.
Yeah. It's with Susan Sarandon.
Yes.
Yeah. So my friend is Helen Prejean, who works with death penalty stuff. And she often says, like, she didn't expect it either. And so I feel like kind of God's hand is in this some way. I mean, I know God's hand is in this. And I've been drawn into this ministry, and that's okay, you know.
Do you get a lot of pushback?
Oh, my gosh. Google James Martin.
Oh, I did.
And, like, sodomite, homosexual, pansy, fag. It's just –
it's ridiculous.
Daily, hourly videos and protests. It's a small but vocal percentage of the church.
But do you like Timothy Dolan,
mm-hmm,
who's
a friend?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever discuss it or?
No, he's been supportive. He's been kind of quietly supportive, which I appreciate, you know. And, you know, I'm very careful to do all these things within the church. So I got permission. You know, I take a vow of – that's the other – is the vow of obedience. So in order to get –
I could never take that vow.
Oh, yeah. But in order to sort of work within the church, work within the Jesuits, when the book came out, I got permission to accept the award. I got permission for the speech I gave. I got permission for the book. So it was all – and I think one of the things that infuriates people is that, because it's not some renegade priest who's left the priesthood who's like, you know,
right,
kind of do it. It's someone from the inside of the church who's gotten permission, who has all the right, who's like crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's, and that infuriates some Catholics. And it also got endorsed by all these different bishops and cardinals. And so So here's the strange thing, and this is funny. I just realized this recently. In the past, when I would think about, advocating for people, I would say, "Oh, you know, you got to do it no matter what. You stand up and you go to the barricades, and it doesn't matter what anybody says." But I've realized, at least as a Jesuit, doing it from within, and for me, now this is not everybody's situation, and getting the permissions and doing it with all the approval, actually, in my case, has made my voice stronger, because people can't kind of take pot shots. I mean, if you go to my Jesuit provincial, the regional superior, and complain, they'll be like, "Yeah, I gave him permission." So if you go to the Vatican, it's
so
like,
you're
yeah.
sort. I mean,
so I'm doing it from within, which
right,
I think,
and you're an amazing messenger.
Thanks.
I mean, the best. But why push back on including people? And also, I don't think it says anywhere in the Bible that, you know, hate gays, to hate gay people, to, you know, and this also the hating of Jews and the hating of, you know, of people of color and immigrant. I mean, this is so anti-Christian.
It is. And it's all fear. It's based on fear. And so there's homophobia, which, you know, obviously is literally fear of the homosexual person, the LGBTQ person. They're different. They're
which,
other.
As you know, we all believe anyone who's so homophobic is gay.
Well, and we'll talk about that later. But then there's also homophobia in the sort of colloquial sense. They hate them. And you know what they do? They couch it in. Now, I'm not challenging any church teaching on same-sex marriage or anything. And so, but they still are opposing this message, and they say, "Well, you know, you're just sort of condoning sin." And I say, "Look, everybody's sinful. You know, why are you focusing on the LGBT person?" And they say, which I detest this phrase, "Hate the sin, love the sinner."
Because, I hate that.
You know why?
So much.
You don't say that about anybody else,
right?
Like, imagine saying that about. Here's the example I always give. Okay. Let's say I'm invited to give a talk to college kids. Now, as we know, like 90% of college kids are having sex, which is also against church teaching, mm-hmm. right? I would never say in front of all these college kids, "Hi, you know, I'm going to hate your sin but love you." People would be like, "What are you talking
yeah,
about?
Exactly.
Why are you treating us like that?"
Right.
Or Catholic families who are using birth control, which right. is also against church teaching. I would never go to a Catholic family conference and say, "You know, you're all sinful." But
right.
You know, so the LGBT person in the church is the only one who is looked at that way. And frankly, I would say many people who say hate the sin and love the sinner, they just hate the person.
It makes me – no,
really,
but I've heard comics
so
say it, like, you know, who I know have done, you know, anti-LGBT stuff. And I'm like, "What? How are you friends with me? You know, hate the sin." And it's like, "You're a sinner. Like, look at you."
That's the point. And they don't see it. And, you know, truly, in terms of the most homophobic people, I'll tell you a story. I gave a talk at a parish and invited by some friends of mine, and the pastor was very nice. And, you know, 99% of the people, 99% yeah. of the people are fine, and they're great, and they're supportive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because more and more people have friends who are LGBT,
right.
brothers. And
that's
sisters,
why I'm so into coming out.
Yeah. And yeah. So I give this talk, and as with most of the talks I give in parishes and colleges and stuff, there were 100 people or so waiting for like book signing and stuff. Okay. At the end of the line, this always happens. There's one person, arms folded,
mm-hmm.
waiting.
No, I mean, they always wait till the end. So
miserable.
So
they can have
yeah.
their time.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm signing all these books. Everybody's super, you know, my son's gay, my this, yeah. blah, blah, blah. And there's this woman, I'll never forget, she's wearing a red suit, very professional looking, not
right.
some crazy person.
Did she have a red hat, baseball
no,
cap
no,
on?
No. And yeah. she no, and she
Making
comes
her,
up
yeah.
and she starts yelling at me. And I mean
screaming
at me. Is sodomy a sin? Yes or no? And so, you know, we go back and forth, and she's just screaming at
and
me.
You're just
and
calm.
I'm just calm, trying to be, because, you know, here's the problem. If I in any way, you know, kind of lash back at her, because there's people like taking pictures.
Oh,
and
yes,
you know,
I get it.
Film
yes,
me.
Yes.
You know, I know that's going to show up. So the next day, I talked to my therapist.
Oh,
it's a kind of a Jewish thing to do, but she's not Jewish.
Okay.
And I said, because it was really unnerving. I'd never been screaming outside like the subway or some crazy
right.
person really publicly just screamed at. And I said to my therapist, where does that come from? And she said, her. It was so freeing.
That's great.
She said, something's going on inside of her.
Right.
Either it's her complicated sexuality, she has lesbian feelings, she has a friend who's a lesbian, her brother's gay, her sister's a lesbian, her mother's whatever.
Right.
It's her. And so once I realized that, and I see so many people online who are, a lot of the people who kind of criticize this ministry are officially ex-gays or former gays. You know, you don't have to be Sigmund Freud to figure this stuff out. So it's fear. It's fear of change. It's fear that, you know, somehow everything's going to change because of these terrible people being in our church. And, you know,
it's it's like, you know, when we when gays got the right to marry, it's just in New York State, they had the most marriages in one day at town hall, at City Hall, And I say that to people. I say, we got the right to marry and we went to City Hall. We didn't go to any churches or synagogues or mosques or anywhere demanding that we could get. We just want the same rights to be able to visit someone in the ICU, to be able to not pay a federal inheritance tax, that that we're treated equally. You know, you're with your partner for 40 years. Why does, you know, Britney Spears can get married for 9 hours.
And you know what I do? I even take it away from the marriage thing. And one of the things I've been doing recently is I did a retreat, believe it or not, a weekend retreat for LGBT Catholics and their families, which was amazing.
It was really amazing.
And so, of course, there's so many, mostly parents and their kids, their LGBT kids. Right. And I met a family. This is outside of Philadelphia. I met a family who I'd met before who have three LGBT kids.
Wow. Out of how many?
Out of three.
Wow.
And so
and if you think it's not genetic, you're not born that way, forget it. Okay.
Yeah. So what I often say to people is, look, and this is a for me, this is like the test case for people. I say, now, look, these kids, they're whatever, 13, 14, 15. They're not married. They're not having sex. They're in terms of like church teaching, they're fine. Okay. Now, where is the place in church for them? And that's the challenge for people because they can't say, oh, you know, hate the sin. They're not doing anything. But even for that situation, people can't fathom it. And I said to one of the kids, very nice. I said, how do the people in your parish treat you? And this kid said, oh, some people don't talk to us anymore.
What?
Yeah. And so that's the kind of
that's so unchristian.
I'll say,
and so un-Catholic.
And the other thing is, look, Jesus, when Jesus was on the earth, right? Amen. He reached out to people who felt like they were on the margins, right? Uh-huh. I mean, women, people who had diseases, you know, lepers, Roman centurions, prostitutes, and so I mean, I'm not, you know, that's not a good analogy perfectly, but LGBT people feel like they're on the margins in the church, and this is where we should be going.
And that's why they leave a lot of them.
And all they want is to feel truly welcome in their own parishes.
Right,
and it's their parish too. I often say,
and look at the outfits. They're amazing.
I said to an LGBT person.
I know
just,
it's too many.
It's hard. We need to come up with a better.
Yeah, name. I know. I can't with that.
And I said, look, I understand. This is what I often tell LGBT Catholics. I do understand that people feel distanced from the church and feel pushed away. I totally understand that. And I understand why people say that I can't go anymore. But my attitude, you know, with these people is to say to them, you are Catholic. You're baptized. You're just as Catholic as the Pope or as me. Don't let people kick you out of your own church.
Right.
And but it's hard. It's just, you know, endless. You know, we just had a situation, you know, with all these people who are being fired too for being married. And we had a situation just the other day in a Jesuit high school in Indianapolis where the Archbishop, you know, said the school is no longer Catholic, but the Jesuits did not fire the person. And kept the person. So it really is this big flashpoint right now in the church. It's also it's a sort of emblem of the culture wars, you know,
right.
And people see it as kind of like the thin edge of the wedge. But it's just sad. So I'm just working for people who just, you know, want to feel at home in their own church. It's their church, too.
Right.
Hey, everyone, you know what I just did? I tore, I poured, and I enjoyed a packet of Liquid IV. Because I love Liquid IV. Liquid IV is a major part of my life. And I just worked out with my trainer and I had a delicious lemon ginger liquid IV. That one has a little extra, that has a little green tea in it. And so that's a little caffeinated. So I enjoy that because I needed it today. And you know, it's getting warmer out. And what does that mean? Summer. Oh God, please come. It can't come soon enough. And that means you have to hydrate. And that's what Liquid IV does. It hydrates you with benefits like electrolytes, vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. And it has 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in one little stick. And that's why Liquid IV is the number one powered hydration brand in America. Okay? And I love it. I use it every day. Ben's basketball team uses it. It is a science-backed formula that works. It keeps you hydrated. And they have sugar-free. They have sugar-free packets in white peach, green grape, raspberry melon, and lemon lime. Okay? I didn't do the sugar-free. Okay. But Elisa does the sugar-free. So what are you going to do? You're going to stay hydrated because it's very, very important. And Liquid IV has been a longtime sponsor and I love them and they are a quality product. And this is what you're going to do. You're going to turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's JUDYGOLD. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, can't even say my name, at liquidiv.com. Got it? You're welcome.
As far as abortion is concerned, which I know you're not, I'm just bringing this up as an example of separation of church and state. You know, I mean, there are things I believe in that I do because I'm a Jew, and I was raised Jewish, and I feel I go into, but I go into synagogue and I feel connected and emotional, and I hear the songs that, you know, my grandmother, you know, it's just, I feel something. Why, you know, it's like the government, you're like, all right, here's an example. Marco Rubio this morning writes some some scripture on his Twitter feed. And I'm like, separation from, you believe what you want. Like I grew up next to Catholics and we loved each other. My mother would give them mass cards, you know, they were wonderful, but that was their private religion. You know, I don't understand this. And the evangelicals, like, you're okay with this president saying what he says and you're like, you know, the moral majority, like it doesn't make sense.
Religion, no. Well, because religion has become so politicized.
Right.
And I think people, they
Keep calling, I hear more and more, this is a Christian nation.
Well, which is, I think that's an appalling thing. And I mean, what about everybody else?
Right. And the anti-Semitism is like through the roof, the anti, you know, Muslim, the racism, you know.
Well, and it's funny because I find that the reaction to this ministry, to this LGBT ministry, now, pluses and minuses. The pluses is that before Pope Francis, I don't think I would have been able to talk about this stuff because things are more open. The minuses are that I think it's okay to hate people again.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Oh, I really do. I mean, online, anonymously, but I mean, really hate people, vilify them, demonize them.
Because they're not doing it in person.
Right.
It's social media.
And but sometimes, you know, people come and they protest and they do it in person. And it's all about the other.
Right.
And that's, you know, and the classic is truly the classic is the Jew. I mean, anti-Semite. Yeah. I mean, as the other and, you know, portrayed. And I mean, I always point this out that, you know, the way that the Jewish person was portrayed in Nazi Germany is like vermin.
Right.
The way that, you know, in Rwanda in terms of the genocide. And migrants are animals, and it's this kind of dehumanization of somebody.
Right.
And I think that's what people do to LGBT people. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all perverts. I was watching a documentary about LGBT people in the military the other day on PBS, which was fascinating.
You just love PBS.
I love PBS.
I know. I do.
And and you know, boy, I saw some of the. I should have realized this, but you know, in like the 40s and 50s, you could be removed from government service if you were found out to be gay. And the headlines, you know, that there was a great series. The headlines were like, you know, government finds perverts, and I was like, so it's all this dehumanization, and it's a kind of it's something I think, you know, Jesus comes to do just the opposite. He comes to tell us about our humanity, and I think that to tell people that LGBT people are just like you is scary. It's scary for people because they don't want to.
Yeah, but they love our music. They love our clothing. They love our hair and makeup. They love. You know, our movies, and it's
increasingly they do, but not everybody.
Right. But I'm just saying, if you love a movie and then you realize, oh, this is made by a gay, do you then hate the movie? Because
a lot of them do.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I've been surprised at how well people can hate. And, you know, and the my joke is, this is not original to me, among Catholics, see how they shove one another.
Right.
Instead of see how they love one another. And It's astonishing to me, the amount of truly hate mail I get, stuff online.
It's ridiculous.
Videos, heretic. I mean, the names, heretic, sodomite, pansy, blah, blah, blah. And you know why they say that? This, I always explain this to people. They think they're prophets.
Right.
We have to say this.
And we've given them the soapbox.
Yeah, hard as it is, we have to say this. But my novice director used to say, you know, and they're persecuting us.
Right.
You know, And my novice director used to say, you know, just because, you know, people are persecuting you and disagreeing with you doesn't mean you're a prophet. You might just be wrong.
Right. Right. You know? Exactly.
So it's been difficult, but it's important to do.
Okay. Now I have three more questions.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I could talk. I know I could talk, but I think someone gets a studio and so pissed off. I am fascinated by confession.
Oh, like let's
fascinating.
Talk about it.
So you've done like
yes,
you've,
of course.
And there's
on
a
both
curtain.
Sides.
Right. Okay. So there's
not,
a curtain.
Not always.
Okay.
Sometimes it's like this. Sometimes it's just like this in a room this size.
Okay. So
what do you want to know?
First of all, I want to know like the worst confession. Can you tell that? Like where you were like surprised, the most surprising confession.
You don't have too many like that because you know why? Because generally speaking, like murderers, they're not going.
Right.
I've had some confessions in terms of like people cheating on their spouses, which have been pretty.
And then you can't say anything.
No, never. You can never say anything. And one of the reasons for that is it's first of all, they're confessing to God. So it's secret. The other thing is no one would ever come to you if there was any chance.
Right. You were going to go to the police.
And that is true. That is one thing that people, I mean, there's been a lot of stuff about priests and sex abuse and all that. People still do trust priests to keep things quiet.
Right.
And you rarely hear, if ever, anyone breaking the seal of the confessional. By the way, if you break the seal of the confession, you're excommunicated as a priest, which means it's pretty severe. So, no, what do you want
to know? Have you ever had, like, a pedophile or anything like that?
No, I have not.
It's so awful, the pedophilia.
Well, let's talk. Let's talk. I want to hear about confession.
I'm just – because, you know, Yom Kippur, we fast and we really think about – what we want to change in ourselves and everything we did, you know, and if we will be sealed in the book of life.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea to go to confession, you know, say,
with the person, face to face.
And I did this. Do the people feel like exonerated, like that, you know?
Well, you're forgiven. I mean, you're forgiven when you
but
come
back. But then if you come back and do the same thing,
well,
are you like, all right, come on,
you're
seriously.
You're human. You're human, and when you come and do the same thing.
Now, okay, 10 times they do the same thing. Then you say, listen,
you're supposed to have what's called, which I think is a great, you're supposed to have a firm purpose of amendment.
Right.
So first of all, the thing about face-to-face, what it does is it does force you to be honest and blunt. And hearing a word of forgiveness from a person is really powerful.
Right.
So you can, you know, of course God forgives us, but to hear, you know, the absolution formula, which is very moving, the prayer, is really powerful for people. And you can see that people cry. They burst into tears.
Oh, of course. I'm sure. Because it's like letting go.
Yeah. So there's that. And the other thing is people need to identify these things very specifically.
Right.
And they can't just say, oh, I was selfish. But you know, if someone comes in and says, "Well, I'm stealing, but I'm not going to change,"
right?
You really can't give that person right. absolution.
Do you have like I stole money from my mother, or I took
everything?
Oh, no way.
The most common sins are
yes. Oh, I can't wait.
Gossip.
Uh huh.
Being mean. You know,
right.
like I was mean to someone. Masturbation.
Right.
People confess that. Cheating.
Right.
Stealing stuff from work.
Right.
They're kind of everyday things. But then you know, once in a while you get like a big one or an unusual one.
And do you go to other priests?
Oh, yeah, of course. I go to people in my house.
Wow.
But I like confession because you feel really freed afterwards.
Right, right.
You really do. And you can feel, all right, God, and you know that God forgives you, but to hear it, you know.
So are you going to confess about this podcast?
No, we haven't done anything sinful. Now, what's interesting is people will say stuff and it's not sinful and you have
right.
to call them on it. So it's
right.
like, oh, well. I was really lazy today. I got up at
right.
12.
And it's like, who
and
cares?
I'm like, that's
no.
not a sin.
Right.
I had a woman once. Can I tell you a funny story?
Yeah.
I had a woman. We were doing confession services at St. Ignatius Loyola, where I
right.
Helped celebrate Mass. And this woman came in. She goes, "Hi, I'm an Episcopalian, and I've never done this before." And I said, "Oh, well, what are you here for?" And she goes, "I just wanted to sort of see what the sacrament is like." And I said, "Well, okay, I can't really give you absolution,
right.
but we can go through it if you think it would be helpful." "Yeah, I've never done it." She was all like,
yeah, like
chirpy and everything.
Right.
And I said, "So what do I do?" And I said, "Well, all right, let's start with a prayer. And, you know, then we can
right.
talk about, you know, where you feel like you've been distanced from God." And,
right.
Okay. So I was kind of selfish and I was sort of greedy and I
right.
said, "Oh, well, like when?"
Right.
And she's like, "Well, you know, like to different people and stuff." I was like, "Well, like who?" You want like
details. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And she was suddenly really, she realized what confession was.
Right.
I was like, "Who were you selfish with? Tell me the
right.
story." She was like, she didn't buy, she didn't sort of sign up for that. So that's part of it. You have to get pretty specific. It can't just be like, "Oh, I'm mean."
Right.
Huh?
You have to do,
you have to
yeah.
be, you know, I'm in a real confession.
Oh, God, I'd be in there for.
Well, sometimes you get people who haven't been for like 30
yeah.
years.
Oh.
And then you'd spend a lot of time.
You know, gossip in the Jewish religion is the worst sin in the entire world.
Pretty much everybody gossips.
Yeah. And it's just, you think of. You know what I, because I'm writing this book, one of the biggest sins
Tell
is.
Tell me the name of your book again.
Yes, I can say that. Fuck you if you can't take a joke. So one of the biggest sins in the Jewish religion is, you know, making a false compliment. Like,
really?
Yeah, like saying, "Oh, you look great." You know,
really?
And knowing that it's, you know, and the worst is when you say something and you know it's going to make the person feel bad. But one of them is false. And I'm like,
really?
There's so many Jews in show business. Like, that can't be such a big sin. But it is.
Like, everybody does that.
Yeah, like, oh. Like, when you know it's.
Oh, you know.
Yeah.
You're like, oh,
nice shirt.
Nice shirt.
Hey, can I Target? You know.
So, yeah, confession. Feel free to go.
I love that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Plus, you're sin-free when you leave.
I got to do that.
Mm-hmm. Feel mm-hmm. free.
I do it all the time. Anyway. I have to ask you this other thing, even though we only have 3 more minutes. I am so sick of people telling me the Jews killed Christ and I'm a horrible person.
You should
and
be sick of that.
What is that crap? It's like, and I've been listening to that since I'm in school and in grammar school.
Give it right back to them. The only person who had the authority to kill Jesus was Pontius Pilate, period.
Okay.
That's the answer.
I'm just going to say Pontius Pilate.
Yeah, Pontius Pilate, who was not Jewish.
Pontius Pilate, not Jewish.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. That's it.
No
that's
bell.
It.
No bell for no. Pontius Pilate, okay? Oh, I screamed. Sorry. All right. So we're very pro-mental. We're very pro-mental health. And I advocate any kind of anything you can do to, you know.
Me too.
Meditation. I meditate. Yep. I work out and I take antidepressants. So we always ask if, and I know the answer, but if you've ever taken an antidepressant.
Oh, an antidepressant. So like
yeah.
Valium or.
That would be that one. Count?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
What?
Why not?
I love you.
Yeah, why not?
That's great.
I mean, not all the time, but.
Right, but no, that you, mm-hmm. you know, because
yes.
we want people.
Everybody
with,
needs a little help.
Yeah.
And I see a therapist.
Yeah. I gotta go back to therapy.
I think there's 3 things I always want to help people deal with that. A spiritual director, which talks
right.
about your spiritual life. A therapist and a massage therapist.
Yes, I have.
I mean,
a
I just think
yeah.
those things are kind of helpful for people just to, you know, be healthy.
When you go to massage therapy, are they like, "Oh, Father,
no,
you
they,
can.
No, they know me now.
Oh, all
so,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm okay.
Like, my collar on, right?
Yeah. I have to leave my collar on for the. All right. So, I, you know, the podcast is called Kill Me Now because I literally get up every day and I'm like, "Oh, my Kill me now.
Yeah.
What pisses you off more than anything? Like, what makes you so angry? I don't know if you're allowed to be angry, but yeah.
People who are mean.
Yeah.
That really infuriates me, honestly. People are mean, not only online, but in person, and I see it drives me crazy.
Like, the president is so mean, Pocahontas,
You know what? That part of his personality really drives me insane.
And it's people just, are mean now. You see how
okay,
the power.
It's okay to hate people.
Right.
No, and it's just, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of bullies in high school.
Exactly.
And it's just.
And that's exactly what he is.
And it is the.
Lowest common denominator.
That part of. His world, his way of being is totally anti-Christian. I mean, you know, Jesus is the ultimate victim.
It's anti-Jewy, too.
It's anti-person.
Yeah.
So, yeah, mean people piss me off.
I am so with you. And I feel like everyone's mean.
Mm-hmm, except you and me.
Right. Exactly. We're perfect.
You're wonderful.
No, you are.
Okay.
Yeah. Will you come back?
I'd love to come back. We have so much more to talk
about. I know.
We didn't talk nearly as much about Jewish things.
I know. And I wanted to go over that with you because.
You wanted to quiz me.
No, I wanted to. like my feelings about being Jewish. And, you know, I have such a strong Jewish identity. And it's, you know, and my mother loved being a Jew. And I just loved.
So did Jesus.
Yeah, Pontius Pilate. I can't wait to say that.
That's it. That's your answer.
Okay. Because I'm done. But yeah, and just the Jews and the Catholics like meshing together. I mean, we have these, our religions are so thousands of years old.
Yeah. And I mean, Jesus was Jewish.
Right.
So was Mary and Joseph.
I know. I don't understand why they hate. Why do they hate us?
Well, a lot of it does come from that. A lot of it from the Gospel of John that, you know, the Jews killed Jesus and, you know, it was an easy excuse.
Right. We are always blamed for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's going to get better in this country?
With Jewish people?
With what's going on, the feeling, the...
You mean just all the hatred?
Yeah. And the migrants.
Truly. Well, I think it's getting worse.
I know. Is there any hope?
There's always hope. And I mean, you know, Jesus, I believe, you know, Jesus rose from the dead. And that shows that, you know, hope is always there and love always triumphs. And I think people are, I mean, this sounds just, I know we're on a funny show, but I mean, truly, to quote Anne Frank, you know, people are fundamentally good.
Right. People are really good.
But I also think that, you know, when you unleash this this hatred, it's really appealing to people.
Right.
And there's a lot of people that, one of the reasons I like Pete Buttigieg is, you know, he recognizes that there's a lot of pain.
Right.
You know, in middle America and among, you know, poor white people.
Right.
But it's to whip it up into kind of hatred is just, it really is anti-Christian.
Yeah. So, I'm sick of it.
I am too. I think that's one of the benefits, like, you know, both of us have a social media
presence. And we can.
It's good to be able to kind of get it out there and say, you know what I do? Every time there's something hateful, which happened today against migrants and refugees, like 250 kids. I just quote the one verse from the Gospels. Jesus said, I was a stranger and you did not welcome me.
Right.
I mean, just
like I saw you did that this morning.
Just remind people. Yeah. Like, this is completely unchristian.
Yes. And disgusting. Yeah. And inhumane.
Inhumane. Right. Beyond Christianity.
Right.
It's just not human.
I adore you.
Thank you. I adore you too.
I think you are one of the greatest people.
Thank you. That's really sweet. Thank you.
It's true.
I feel the same.
Aww.
Toda.
Rabbah. I can't wait for you to come back. Can we have dinner or something?
Yeah,
I'll pay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to ask if I can pay for dinner?
No, you can do that. You can.
All right. Okay.
Thank you.
But you don't drink.
No, but you can drink.
Can I get wasted? And be like, Father, let me tell you something.
It'll be the first time.
Yeah, I bet.
Feel free.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for all your love and support. We cannot thank you enough. It does not go unnoticed. And thank you all for listening to this very special episode of Kill Me Now. And as we always say, so long!
And everything was wonderful. I'll see you soon. Thank you for the visit. So long!
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day from Movement. Whether your mom is into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried and true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, everything at Movement is up to 50% off site-wide during their Mother's Day sale. A watch is a gift that celebrates all the time you spent with mom. And a Movement watch is even more than that. Movement uses industry-leading materials for their fresh, modern watch designs, from technically complex ceramics to vintage-inspired style, all for an incredible value your wrist and wallet will both love. And with one-size-fits-all convenience and fast, free shipping and returns, it's a stress-free shopping experience. Save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with Movement. Get up to 50% off site-wide during their Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.